And we are in Mark chapter 13. This will be our last night in Mark 13. I'm pretty sure. In response to Jesus being asked a couple questions by the disciples in Mark 13. He'd already had, it's the last week of Jesus' ministry. He's had some conflicts with the religious leaders, especially on the Temple Mount. And as he's leaving the temple, chapter 13, verse 1, one of his disciples said to him, "Look, teacher, what massive stones, what magnificent buildings." In other words, this would be a great place to start the kingdom. It's all ready to go. And Jesus says, "Do you see all these great buildings? Not one stone here will be left on another. Every one will be thrown down." So there is the topic there is the almost, I would assume, the kingdom is the issue. One of the disciples is you know, not talking about, we've got a lot of work to do, we got a lot of changes to make. It's like, this is a great temple. Look how massive these stones are. This looks like it's been built for eternity. I'm paraphrasing here. It seems like he's pretty impressed with the Temple Mount, and this would be a great place for the kingdom. She's correct and says, it'll be destroyed. The whole thing will be destroyed. This is not the kingdom, because again, the guys, the disciples coming into Jerusalem, they're arguing for a place in the kingdom. They're thinking the kingdom's going to come. Jesus had the triumphal entry on that Sunday before of this week, and so it looks like things are really going somewhere. Jesus, no, this is all coming down. This ends soon. And again, that's the question. Chapter 13. After saying not one stone will be left here, verse 3, as Jesus was sitting on the Temple Mount, sitting on the Mount of Olives, I'm thinking here of this picture right here. There's the Temple Mount. It was filled with the beautiful temple buildings. He's now sitting on the Temple or on the Mount of Olives looking over this. They came up, it says, Peter, James, John, and Andrew asked him privately, tell us, when will these things happen, and what will be the sign they are about to be fulfilled? And so they say again this phrase, these things, and this is kind of important as we wrap this up tonight. These things, when will these things happen, and what will be the sign that they'll all be fulfilled? And this is going to split, it appears, into two levels of a question. These things are going to refer to 70 AD, or the destruction that led to the falling of the Temple Mount. In other words, when will these things be destroyed? The answer is going to be 70 AD. That's when these things are going to happen. And then the fulfilled part, it seems to now project out to what we'll just say the end. Better would probably be the second coming or the return of Jesus Christ or the actual setting up of the kingdom. When will the fulfillment, when all these things are taking place, what will be the fulfillment when the kingdom comes? And real quickly, the way this chapter ends, this is going to be the punchline, is 70 AD is the answer to when will these things happen, and when will this happen, when will the kingdom come? That is an unknown. It's not Jesus saying, I'm not really, I mean, it's kind of shocking if you read it just the way it says it. Jesus isn't saying, I'm not going to tell you. I don't want you to know. It's a secret. He says, no one knows. The angels in heaven don't know. The Son of Man does not know. Only the Father. And throughout this whole chapter and throughout the whole book, the Son of Man is Jesus. So Jesus says, I can answer this, and he'll answer it here tonight as we get through it. This generation will not pass away. This is going to happen. Basically, if a generation is 40 years, it's 30 A.D., it's going to happen before 70 A.D. I mean, he says it's not going to be before this generation pass away. These things will happen, which is the destruction of the temple. But then we talk about that day or these things. The phrase that we're going to use here is going to be all these things. And that if you look on the very last page, I just turned the notes over. This is from last time, from chapter 13, verse 19. There is a distinction between the events of history, early church, general time, 66 to 70 AD, and events of eschatology. There's two things. There's history that's cycling through, and then there's the end, the appearing of the Son of Man. The difference becomes noticeable in these verses when we realize these things, the phrase "these things" refers to the fall of Jerusalem. When will these things happen? The temple's going to be destroyed, not one stone's left upon another. When will these things happen? This destruction of the temple. But yet this filters over into end times, and that's those days in chapter 13, verse 17, 19, 20, and 24. These things talk about 70 AD, but those things or those days start speaking of something that we do not know when it's going to happen. It's not the same event. It's an eschatological event. So those days, and this comes out of Daniel 12, 1, Joel 2, 29, when he starts talking about the end times. And then in this these verses here tonight, those days, like I said, becomes all these things. He's going to answer this question, all these things, but then to refer to those days, the eschatological times, he's going to say all these things. And so that's kind of where this is heading. The answer is going to be 70 AD, and when will it all be over? We can't answer that question. But the point is, there is a moral to this chapter, and again, we'll get into it. But what do they need to learn? What do they need to know? You need to be watching. Alert. These are two good terms. But basically, it means working. You're going to need to be faithful. You can't be no sleep. Be on your guard. This is what you're going to. There's something for you to be doing. Now, the temple's going to be destroyed in this generation. Your job throughout the history of the coming up to the temple being destroyed and until the end is this is what you're going to need to be working on. He can't tell them a date. And again, what good would a date do? I mean, obviously, I want to know the date. I've tried to figure it out. We put things together. I want to know that everybody thinks we're living in the end times. But again, that's normal. And I got a couple of verses here written down. The apostles, with this answer, you understand, this is why with this answer, no one knows. The disciples were writing as if it was right around the corner because they had no idea. It was a mystery. It wasn't revealed. It wasn't like God's holding it back from them understanding it. I don't think we've got the capacity to unravel the mystery. It's not like, well, if it's a certain date, if we knew a certain date, imagine how confusing the whole thing would be. You'd try to time it and work it out. God has got all these things under control. Our job is to be doing these things, and when the end happens, it's going to happen. Now, that still leads to the question, there are certain things that we could identify when we start talking about eschatology that would certainly mark that we've entered into the last 7 years. I mean, it's pretty clear it's 7 years. Half of it is 42 months or 1,260 days. I mean, we're counting days now. So it seems like you should be able to put a chart on it. But about this, even the time you're putting a chart on it, it's like, but it's a mystery. It will surprise you. You do not fully understand. Now, I don't think that means there's not going to be a second coming. I don't think that means there's not going to be a kingdom of God on earth. I think it means it's not established yet. It's not in God, the Father's mind. And then you've got to ask the question, the Son on earth, the Son of Man doesn't know, but surely when he's a resurrected and seated at the right hand of God the Father, that he's looking at God going, and God the Father says, oh, no one knows but me. It's kind of hard for him to be part of the Trinity. Again, now we're into theology, that Jesus, well, yeah, I know everything. I created the whole world, but I don't know that. I don't know. That's another discussion, and I don't want to get into it. But one answer would be, you know, as a son of man, as a human, when he was Emmanuel walking with us, as a man, there's certain things he didn't know. But clearly, on the deity side, it's hard to say that the Son of God doesn't know. So with that being said, that's kind of where we're heading into these verses right here. So here we go. Let me start in Mark 13, and throughout this chapter, real quickly in summary, chapter 13, verse 5, Jesus said to them right away, "Watch out that no one deceives you. Many will come in my name." And he begins to describe events, and then nation rising against nation, famines, earthquakes. These are the beginning of birth pains. You must be on your guard. Verse 9, he says it again. You will be handed over to the local consuls, flogged in the synagogues. This is talking about early church persecution, even the Jews being handed over to the Sanhedrin. And the gospel must be first preached to all the nations. When you're arrested, don't worry about what you're going to say. Just say whatever is given to you. The Holy Spirit will be working through you. Brother will betray brother. Children rebel against their parents. All men will hate you because of me. But he who stands firm to the end will be saved. Verse 14. Now it begins, when you see the abomination that causes desolation. But before we get to that verse 14, which was a pivot, kind of a hinge verse, look in verse 7. When you hear of wars and rumors of wars, do not be alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Which is kind of a key verse. He gives you all these signs, but they're like non-signs. History's going to happen, but just because history's cycling through repeatedly doesn't mean it's the end. Otherwise, the end is constantly staring you in the face. And so he's talking about history. But then in verse 14, when you see the abomination that causes desolation standing where it does not belong. Now, again, with that reference, we knew that was fulfilled, spoken by Daniel. But it was fulfilled by the Seleucids with Antiochus Epiphanes. It apparently was fulfilled again by the Romans or the Zealots, the Jews, desecrating the Temple Mount in 68-69 AD, and the church fled. But it's clear that it's going to happen again because the New Testament picks it up. It's going to happen again in some future event. At the end times, where the temple is going to be rebuilt, the sacrifices are going to be desecrated again. When that happens, if it's 70 AD, again, these verses, verse 14, they apply to the Roman wars, but they also seem to project to the future. And again, that you've got to be honest with that. Some people just want to rush into the end times. That's true. But a lot of these things, they cycled through with the Jewish wars. There's a fleeing. Let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. And the church did. They followed the advice. The same thing will be true in the tribulation or in the 70th week, after the first 42 months, first 3.5 years, something like this will happen. And the Jews will have to flee. It even tells them where to flee. Daniel says you flee to the mountains, Ammon, Moab, Edom, which would say would be Saudi Arabia, Jordan and Saudi Arabia. They're told to flee. So that would be an eschatological fulfillment. Tells them how quickly to flee. Tells them when to pray. That doesn't happen in the winter. It says those days will be cut short. And that could be, we talked about last week, with the death of Nero, Titus held back his attack on Jerusalem and went to Rome to become the emperor. And then, Vespasian held back and went to Rome to become the emperor. And so the days were cut short so that the people could flee. In 68-69 AD, and then Titus resumed the war to finish off Jerusalem. Well, something like that will take place apparently in the future also, where the days are going to be cut short. Otherwise, it says the text says no flesh would survive. And the last time we looked at, when you go through the seals, the trumpets, the bowls, I mean, the earth, there's no fresh water. It's overheating, not because of global warming. That's another whole concept. But there will be a catastrophic events taking place, hailstones. People are being destroyed. And if it hadn't been cut short, no one would be alive when Jesus does come back. Revelation makes that pretty clear. And that's verse 20. If the Lord had not cut short those days, no one would have survived. And then beginning in verse 21, at that time, if anyone says to you, look, here's the Christ, or look, there he is, do not believe it, for false Christs and false prophets will appear and perform signs and miracles to deceive the elect, if that were possible. So be on your guard. I have told you everything ahead of time. In other words, he's telling you what it's going to be, so you can see this disaster coming or this confusing event happening. He says, don't be alarmed. I've told you it's going to happen ahead of time. And almost when you see this confusing event, it almost could become a sign of confidence because Jesus told me it was going to be confusing. It's very confusing. Oh, I find confidence in the confusion because he says, I've told you this ahead of time. But in those days, following that distress, and now right here, we're going to pick this up, the verse before and this in just a moment. But in those days, following that distress, understand what Jesus is going to do right here. He takes Jeremiah, Isaiah, Daniel, Ezekiel, Old Testament verses, and just captures the essence of what was being said when they talked about the end times. The sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, the stars will fall from the sky, and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. Key phrase, shaken. At that time, when you men will see the Son of Man coming in clouds with great power and glory. So when these events begin to take place, it's summed up in one simple verse, two verses, 24 and 25. But that captures, I'm going to try to go through some of those Old Testament references, that captures an entire concept of the sun being darkened, the moon not shining, the stars falling, and heavenly bodies being shaken. The earth will be shaken at that time. And it's the 70th week type events. It's the end of time. And that's what Jesus refers to. At that time, men will see the Son of Man coming in clouds with great power and glory. This is the Son of Man who went to his death on the cross. Now he's going to come back with great glory. He first came as the servant. He's now coming as the king. He first came as the sacrifice. He's going to return as the lion. It's often said. And he will send his angels to gather his elect from the four winds, from the ends of the earth to the ends of the heaven, which was an intentional, he's combining two different sets of verses that are saying the same thing, from one ends of the heavens to the other, or one end of the earth to the other. He says from one end of the heavens to the ends of the earth. He's combining verses there that's capturing this ideal of the eschatological events. Now, verse 28, now learn a lesson from the fig tree. As soon as its twigs get tender and its leaves come out, you know that summer is near. Now, we're going to talk about that because the go-to reference on this is when you say fig tree, especially in chapter 13, because in chapter 11, Jesus cursed the fig tree, which represented Israel, apparently, because he goes in and rejects the temple, turns over the tables, and the fig tree represents Israel, the fig tree or the vine throughout the Old Testament. So the go-to here, and I'm going to warn you, the go-to here is to say, now learn this lesson from the fig tree. As soon as its twigs get tender and its leaves come out, you know that summer is near. In other words, learn this from the fig tree, which we mean Israel. When you see the twigs get tender and its leaves come out, you start seeing it blossom, then you know the end is near. It's like, now be careful before you write that down. Everybody says that, and that may be true. But is he talking about metaphorically about Israel being the fig tree, or is he now just telling you common sense? You know summer is near when you see the trees begin to, it's going to be this simple. When you see the Son of Man coming in power and glory, you know. It's like, well, when you look out and you start seeing buds on trees, you know it's summer. So you mean when Israel becomes a nation, again, we're near the end. I see in 1948, Israel became a nation, and I've heard many, many sermons. I'm not making fun of it. I'm just saying be careful, because is that what this means? When you see the fig tree / Israel become a nation and start budding, you know the end time is near. Well, it could be. I mean, Israel's going to have to be a nation to have the temple restored. It could be that, but that was 1948. I mean, you understand, it was 30 AD. By 70 AD, 40 years later, Jerusalem's gone, or it's destroyed. And 1948, add 40 years to it, 1988, thus we've talked about that before, the book 88 Reasons Why Jesus Coming Back in 1988, didn't work out, so he wrote another bestseller, or tried to, 89 Reasons Why He's Coming Back in 89, second one didn't go as well. But I mean, you can see that, but you see, we're now 2023, And it's like, now you're adding 70 years to 1948. Now you're adding 100 years to 90 years. It's like, that may not even have been what it meant. So I'm going to say, I mean, put that on the shelf. Don't disagree with it. But also consider, does this make more sense that Jesus said, now learn a lesson from the fig tree. When you see the trees budding, you know it's summer. When you start seeing these things start to take place, you know the season's here. Now, when it is, I'm not going to be able to tell you, he says. Okay, so there, we'll talk about that. Even so, when you see these things, now watch this. I'm getting ahead of myself because this phrase right there, I already mentioned it here. When you see these things happening, you should know that it is near, right at the door. Now, I've got this in the notes, and I'm out of sync here, but since I'm doing it already, I reminded you what we talked about last time. These things, when will these things happen, was the question. Jesus then goes through and talks about some events that are going to be taking place, and then he says, when you see the fig tree blossom, or you know summer's near, the same thing. When you see these things happen, know that it is near as summer is to when the trees are budding. What things? These things were a question asked by the disciples concerning the temple being destroyed. And when you see these things, the temple destruction is near. In other words, this whole section about the fig tree is about Jerusalem and 70 AD. When you see these things happen, remember when it talks about those days or those things. So it is possible, you can try to put that on the shelf. This refers to Israel becoming a nation in 1948, and we're very close to the end times. Okay, put that on the shelf. I tend to disagree with that. Look for something else. Now he's just giving you a general parable about when you see these things. But what things? Well, the things he's described, and these things was what the disciples asked about. These things. So when they say, what are these things? Jesus gives them these things, and then he says, when you see that, it is near. Now, the next verse I'm way ahead of myself. I want to do this with notes instead of just shooting at you. It says, when you see these things happening, you know that it is near, right at the door. Now watch this. I tell you the truth. You see what I'm saying right here? They ask, Jesus says, there's not going to be one stone left upon another. They say, when will these things happen? Jesus gives them a list, and he says, when you see these things, know it's near. And then how near? Well, when you see these things happening, you know that it is near, right at the door. Verse 30, I tell you the truth. You know, that's a statement of fact. That means, verily, verily, I say unto you. That means, write this down. This is a point of doctrine. I tell you the truth. This generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. In other words, these things are a sign of the destruction of the temple. Well, the destruction of the temple is going to happen before this generation passes away. So if it's going to happen, if it's 30 AD plus 40 years, it's 70 AD, and it's rough numbers, but again, we're talking about actual dates here, then these things are going to happen between now, 30 AD, you're going to see these things happen and the destruction of the temple. I think that's what it's talking about. Now you can say 1948, that generation, add 70 years to it. Okay, help me out here. That's 11. That's 2018. That's a 70-year generation. That generation will not pass away until you see these things happen. Well, 1988 didn't work. 2018 has come and gone. We had COVID happening. I mean, it's COVID was heading that way. Are we going to make the generation 80 years, and now you've got 20? I mean, I'm not making fun. I'm just saying that may be what you want to do, but that may be not even what it's talking about when he's talking about these things. When will the temple be destroyed? When will these things happen? These things will happen before this generation passes away. 70 AD, it is complete. So I'm going to say right there that he was talking, and you know this chapter is about the destruction of the temple. I mean, a lot of it with an overtone towards the future. Okay, all these things have happened. Now, I've got to come back to this and do a cleaner job of this. But he just talked about this generation will certainly not pass away. Then look in verse 31. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. I'm going to come back to that. You've got three passing aways. This generation will pass away. Heaven and earth will pass away. This generation will not pass away until, in a sense, the temple passes away. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. There's three passes away there, and then we'll put that together in a moment. Then the last part of this chapter, this now having ended talking about 70 AD, now we move into what it is like a shadow of, is the end times. No one knows about that day or hour, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. Be on your guard, be alert. You do not know when that time will come. It's like a man going away. He leaves his house and puts his servants in charge, each with his assigned task, and tells the one at the door to keep watch. This is the assignment for the disciples, right here. This is what it's like for you. You're going to see this temple destroyed. This generation will see it. But this is what you're concerned about. You're like being put in charge of something, and someone's going to go away, and they're going to return, but you don't know when. You just keep doing what you were assigned to do. Don't get distracted by these other things, including end times. Therefore, verse 35, therefore keep watch, because you do not know when the owner of the house will come back, whether in the evening or at midnight or when the rooster crows at dawn. If he comes suddenly, do not let him find you sleeping. What I say to you, I say to everyone, watch. So with that being said, that's the text of the verses we're looking at here. Let's see if we can go through the notes here. This is, again, the English Standard Version on the notes. We go back to chapter 13, verse 23. This is part of last week's look. Be on your guard. I have told you these things beforehand. Remember, we mentioned that. It's going to get confusing, but your confidence is I've told you the things that were going to happen. Not necessarily pleasant things. This was used by Jesus in John 13, 19. I'm telling you this now before it takes place, that when it does take place, you may believe that I am he. If you go back to John 13, he's talking about some events that are about to take place, and he says, I'm telling you these things, so when these disasters, these questionable things, what is happening, you know I told you ahead of time, and by knowing that I told you this, you can believe that I'm in charge of all of these events that are transpiring. If you understand what I'm saying, it's going to get bad, but I'm not in a panic because I'm telling you this is going to happen ahead of time. And when it does, you can join me in the peace knowing I've told you this ahead of time. Same thing here. These things are going to get confusing, but I'm telling you ahead of time, and he'd assume the same thing. Now that you know I've told you ahead of time, when you get to that confusing point, you can actually have peace in the confusion because I told you. This is where we've got to go through this disaster to get to where we want to go. Stay on your guard is a translation of the Greek. We'll see it again here in a few verses. Blepete, which means look or look at or pay attention. Blepo, simply by itself, is used to say, I look, I see, I perceive, I discern. So you be looking. Always be looking. And that's where he gives you some things to look for. I can't tell you the date, but I can tell you what to look for. I can tell you it's going to get confusing, but when it does, be on your guard. Keep looking at it because it's all good. Don't go to sleep. Don't give up. Don't get discouraged. Point three, again, the sign of the faithful servant is not foretelling. This is important. The sign of the faithful servant is not foretelling and trying to guess the future or predict the future, but alertness, paying attention, and obedience to Christ in the present. That's huge in an eschatological chapter. And I say that to myself because I've got charts. Because as soon as you start talking about, you know, these things, like Paul talks about it, got a whole book of Revelation, Daniel's got prophecy. A good scholar, a good Christian, someone that's a student of the Word is going to try to put those things together and create a sequence of events because that's how you teach it. Once you've got a sequence of events and it's going to happen in real time, you start looking for them. I mean, that's normal. But that's not the goal. It's like you don't get, like bonus points because you figured it out. I've often hope that we'd be able to compare our charts in the future and then you guys all sit around and say that I was right and that if you disagree with me, I was wrong. But that's a very, I think, low-level carnal Christian that I'm definitely part of, and that guess the date game. But Jesus' point here is to be alert, pay attention, be obedient. Don't let these things be a distraction. And here, point A, do not lose sight of the mission as the days approach. I mean, if you knew Jesus was coming back, you know, at a certain date, like in 2 weeks, 2 years, then I'd really get busy and serve the Lord. Okay, why don't you get busy and serve the Lord now? Or if I knew it was coming, I'd be like, well, there's no sense trying now. It's like, well, that's exactly the wrong response. I mean, we live our lives, and I've said it before, but Jesus, and this is not this is not true doctrine, but I was in a church one time, and they taught, this is when I was a younger kid in a denominational church, and they said, well, the second coming is happens for everybody individually at the point of your death. That was the second coming. It's kind of like, okay, well, that's not what the Bible says, because it sounds like we got, you know, the sky splitting, the earth is shaking, it's a historical moment. But nonetheless, the point is true. For 2,000 years, Christians have lived, served, and died and never saw the second coming. So if you know the date, say it's going to be in 200 years. Okay, the second coming is not going to happen until for another 200 years. How does that affect your life? Well, I guess we're not really in the end times. Well, like you're going to like put your game face on in the end times? I mean, because your end times, I'm 63. My end times is in the next, you know, 20 or 30 or 40 years. If Jesus comes back or not, I have a personal end time coming. So when am I going to get serious? So with that idea, everyone, you can't base your Christianity or your service on a date in the future, because you're living here in this moment now, and you don't know. And again, so that's kind of one of the points Jesus is making to these people. No one will be able to predict the end even as these things happen, which is also interesting. Also, no one will be able to miss the end no matter how they have rebelled. So Jesus made it clear. He's going to make it clear. The Son of Man will appear and no one will miss it. So if you have the wrong date, you're going to see it. If you rebelled against God, say there is no second coming, you're going to see it. It's going to happen. The hope of eschatology is not when it happens, but that it will happen. And so we're serving today knowing that there is a kingdom coming, there is judgment, and there is a kingdom to be entered into. So we serve today not knowing when it is, but knowing that it is going to be. Okay, chapter 13, verse 24. But in those days, now again, that's different than these things, but in those days. You see the word switch there. These things, 70 AD, but in those days, after that tribulation, and that's interesting because there's going to be tribulation throughout history, but during that great tribulation, now we begin some very serious references. This is Jesus doing nothing but quoting or summing up Old Testament verses. The sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light. Verse 13:25, and the stars will be falling from heaven, and the powers in the heavens will be shaken. Now, what I've done here on these notes, that is Jesus just shooting out some catchphrases in a very scholarly manner. I'm not making fun of it, but he's capturing verses from Isaiah 13:10, 13:9-13. Isaiah 24:23, Isaiah 24:19-23, Daniel 7:13. Also, it's another. I got another place written down somewhere. It's Isaiah 34, I think somewhere. But these are all references to an event in the future. This is not a reference to the Seleucids during the Maccabean Revolt. It's not a reference to the Roman destruction of Jerusalem. This is a reference from the prophets: Isaiah, Jeremiah, Daniel. We could go through all of them. Of this great day of the Lord that's coming. I'm going to read bottom of page 1, Isaiah 13:10 and Isaiah 13:9-13. And I've got underlined the phrase that Jesus takes and puts in his quote. Again, Jesus taking a whole concept of Old Testament verses and pulling concepts out of them and putting them into this one little new verse. But all he's doing is referencing Old Testament verses, and this is not like new revelation, like, oh, the Son of Man had to come tell us this. No, he's just reading you your Old Testament and condensing it into some catchphrases. But what's interesting is to see, I think at least to look at as we go by this, is what is around those verses. Where did they come from? In other words, what's the context of the verses, the parts of the verses that Jesus pulled out? Here's Isaiah 13, 10 and 9 through 13. Behold, the day of the Lord comes, cruel, with wrath and fierce anger, to make the land a desolation and to destroy its sinners from it. For the stars of the heavens and their constellations will not give their light. The sun will be dark at its rising, and the moon will not shed its light. This is the English Standard Version of the Masoretic text of the Hebrew Scriptures. I will punish the world for its evil and the wicked for their iniquity. I will put an end to the pomp of the arrogant and lay low the pompous pride of the ruthless. I will make people more rare than fine gold and mankind than the gold of Ophir. Therefore, I will make the heavens tremble. That's where you get in Hebrews and other places, the heavens shaking. Therefore, I'll make the heavens tremble and the earth will be shaken out of its place. What does that mean? The earth will be shaken. Remember, in Revelation, weird things are happening and the earth is going to be shaken out of its place. And you understand from a little bit of science that we can throw out just real quickly, the placement of the earth in the universe is exact. A little bit closer, different angle. I mean, we freeze out, we burn up. I mean, it's got to be the right amount of oxygen, the right amount of all these things has to be balanced perfect. And if he shakes it out of its place, what's going to happen? Well, the end times. The earth will be shaken out of its place at the wrath of the Lord of hosts in the day of his fierce anger. So Jesus is clearly, he's saying, as we just read, but in those days after that tribulation, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light and the stars will be falling from the heaven and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. He's getting that information from that kind of a context. Isaiah 24, verse 23, 19 through 23. The earth is utterly broken. The earth is split apart. The earth is violently shaken. The earth staggers like a drunken man. It sways like a hut, meaning talk about a hut in the wind that's blowing. Its transgression lies heavy upon it, and it falls and will not rise again. On that day, there's an eschatological phrase, on that day the Lord will punish the hosts of heaven in heaven. Now stop and just ponder that. He'll punish the hosts of heaven in heaven. Now you can be talking about the stars, but when he talks about the hosts of heaven, and we're going to come up with several other times, the powers of the heavens are referred to in the New Testament. I've got the verses written down here. Well, right at the bottom of page 2. Just two quick examples. The rulers and authorities in heavenly places in Ephesians 3:10. In Ephesians 3:10, the church is demonstrating the manifold wisdom of God before the rulers and authorities in the heavenly places. And the rulers and authorities in heavenly places are the spiritual powers that are not human, that God is demonstrating his grace and his ability to transform a fallen person made out of dirt into the very image of Jesus Christ through his manifold wisdom. And we are demonstrating that in our lives today. We're fallen creatures in a race that is in rebellion towards God, consumed with the sin nature. But because of Jesus Christ has redeemed us, we're now in this condition, not just delivered from it. We're left here on the dirt planet in a dirt body with a sin nature, but with new life, with the Spirit of God, with the Word of God. And we're being transformed into the image of the Son of God, like not in a perfect like garden, what do you name, a greenhouse, a terrarium, like the botany center. Is that the botany center? Botanical center. You know, you got all this perfect watering and the lighting and the temperature. Ah, perfect little crop. No, let's put that in a dump. Let's put it in a desert. Let's put it in the worst place possible and then grow a perfect crop. And that's, we're in the dump yard of the universe. We talk about sin nature and rebellion towards God. We'll read about what God's going to do to the planet. And that's where he leaves us here and says, ah, perfect. What are you going to leave us here? Because it's a good area to grow in? Possibly. but he's going to demonstrate his manifold wisdom before the rulers and authorities in the heavenly realms to watch, look what I can do. Right out of this desert, right out of this junkyard, this sinful culture, I'm going to raise up sons of God who are going to be conformed to the image of Jesus Christ and inherit the kingdom. Now, that's one reference. Okay, that's just a reference in Ephesians 3. The manifold wisdom of God is being demonstrated to the rulers and authorities in heavenly places through the church today. And then Ephesians 6:12, it says, our battle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers and authorities in heavenly places. So when you look around the whole concept of human history, what your culture, your academics, your politics, your nations, it's like, and we're fighting each other. We're fighting, you know, the battles between what's going on. It's like, wait, your battle is not against flesh and blood. Your battle is against the rulers and authorities that are using the fallen creatures to win their battle against God. So that's another reference, Ephesians 6:12. Our battle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers and authorities where? In the heavenly realms. And then finally, in chapter 7 of Revelation, we could read it, but of course we got to finish this. Satan was thrown down to the earth from heaven. Now you can talk about that being an event that happened in the past, and that would be true. Some people want to say it takes place in Luke when Jesus sends out his disciples and they cast out demons. And Jesus says, I saw Satan fall like lightning out of heaven, like it happened in, you know, 28 AD. But it apparently clearly happens in Revelation. Now, I think Satan has fallen. I think Jesus destroyed a good control of Satan had on the earth with his ministry. But it's going to happen in the future because he'll be thrown down. And when he gets here, he realizes his time is short. So Satan, in the end times, when the earth is being shaken, there's also going to be a battle in heaven that casts these powers down to the earth, which unleashes a lot of the demonic activity and what we see, the signs and wonders, because everything in the heavenly realms is being put down here on the earth, and we can build a case. But especially when you see that verse right there, Isaiah 24:23, the earth is utterly broken, the earth is split apart, the heaven is violently shaken, the earth staggers like a drunk man. I'm on the top of page 2. It sways like a hut, its transgression lies heavy upon it, and it falls and will not rise again. On that day, the Lord will punish the host of heaven in heaven. And that would be potentially the rulers and authorities in heavenly places, including Satan, who's going to lose his place and be cast to the earth, Revelation 7, and the kings of the earth on the earth. So the rulers in the heavens and the rulers on the earth are going to be punished. They will be gathered together as prisoners in a pit. They'll be shut up in a prison, and after many days, they will be punished. We could talk about that. Then the moon will be confounded and the sun ashamed, for the Lord of hosts reigns on Mount Zion and in Jerusalem, and his glory will be before his elders. And then Daniel chapter 7. Oh, I want to go back and read Daniel 7 to get to the context. I don't have time. I wanted to do that. Daniel chapter 7, verse 13. Here's 13 and 14 and 25 through 27. I saw in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven, there came one like a son of man, and he came to the Ancient of Days, and he was presented before him, and to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. And this is one of the reasons why Jesus picks up that name whenever he refers to himself. He doesn't call himself the Christ, the Messiah. He calls himself the Son of Man, because that plays right into this right here. The Son of Man, I am here to receive my kingdom, which he's going to be rejected and not received at that time, but the day is going to come back around where he will be ushered in and be given the kingdom. He shall speak words against the Most High. This is the Antichrist now. I've skipped several verses going to verse 25 of chapter 7. He, the Antichrist, again, that I don't have context for that. I'm just saying that. Shall speak words against the Most High, God the Father, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High. That means persecute them and wear them out through opposition, oppression. And shall think to change the times and the law. Meaning he's going to change reality. We could call this right here, that is, woke is trying to do that right now. They're trying to change reality. It's postmodernism, if that's what it is historically. But it's going to be a type of changing the times and the law. I'm going to alter reality, not just two genders. We're going to have multiple genders, not just nations. We're going to get rid of all nations and have one nation. They're going to start changing things, and of course, that's going to cause more chaos. That's been the goal of man, especially Tower of Babel. We can see it throughout history. Change times and law, and they shall be given into his hand for, here it is, he will be able to do this for a time, times, and half a time. And every commentator, if it be Jewish or Gentile, I mean, that's serious. I mean, you can have thousands of idiots. But time means 1 year, times means 2 years, and half a time means half a year. Put them together, you've got 1 + 2 = 3, plus a half, 3.5. That's half of the 70th week. That's half of 7. So that's 1,260 days. That's 42 months. That's 3.5 years, or it's time, times, and half a times. And he'll be successful with his postmodern woke culture for a time, times, and half a time will be given to him. But the court shall sit in judgment. This is the heavenly court. And his dominion shall be taken away to be consumed and destroyed to the end. And the kingdom and dominion and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High. Now that's a crazy verse right there. It says the Ancient of Days ushers in the Son of Man and gives him the kingdom. And then by the time you get to the end of the chapter, that kingdom is given to who? The saints. The ones that are conformed into the image of the Son of God. The Son of God does the work, receives the kingdom, and then basically steps out of the way and ushers them in and gives them the kingdom. And they've been, the reason why, it's like they've been prepared for this kingdom through time. Anyway, we're getting way off subject there. His kingdom shall be an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. And this right here is talking about when Jesus says this right here. But in those days, he captures all those verses. After this tribulation, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, the stars will be falling from heaven, and the powers in the heavens will be shaken. Those powers in the heavens could be the rulers and authorities in heavenly places. Okay, turn the page. Chapter 13, when you see that, when that takes place, when those powers are shaken, the sun won't shine, the earth is being shaken, well, the Son of Man is about ready to get his kingdom, and that's why you see in verse 3, the very next thing Jesus says, and then they will see the Son of Man coming in clouds with great power and glory. Now, we've all, in a sense, been waiting for it, anticipating it, living like it's happening or is real, but those that have been in rebellion, been trying to change all these things, they will see, because he's going to now come back into history. He's re-entering the universe, coming back to the earth, and they will see it and with clouds of power and great glory. And that is a direct reference from Daniel chapter 7, and that is what got Jesus slapped at one of his trials in front of the high priest. He says, are you the Christ? Are you the Messiah? And he says, you'll see the Son of Man coming in clouds and great power and glory. And they slapped him, and Jesus questioned him on, you know, why did you slap me? What was your reason? Because they're now they're going outside of the law, they're now just using the court setting to punish him. Real quickly, these points, verse point one, Jesus often referred himself as Son of Man. The disciples knew this, so it would be impossible for them to misunderstand that Jesus was referring to himself coming from the throne of heaven with great eschatological power to bring judgment and to establish the kingdom and to fulfill all those Old Testament verses. He talked himself from the beginning, Son of Man this, Son of Man that, Son of Man this, Son of Man will go to his death, Son of Man will be betrayed, Son of Man will be crucified, to be raised from the dead of 3 days. Okay, you're talking about yourself, that's not going to happen. And he says, the Son of Man is going to come in power, in great glory. It's like, I wonder who he's talking about. I mean, there's no doubt. Jesus is talking about himself coming back from heaven. There's really only one interpretation of this verse, Jesus, Son of Man, who is coming to judge the world, deliver the chosen, and establish God's kingdom. The coming clouds of glory is Daniel 7. I got that written there. Chapter 13, verse 27. And then he will send out angels and gather his elect from the four winds, from the ends of the earth to the other. The elect have been mentioned. These are the people that are his chosen. The remnant of Israel is the elect of the Old Testament, but now in the New Testament, they're going to be those that are the believers that have accepted him as the Messiah. There's that phrase, the ends of the earth to the ends of heaven, is coming out of Deuteronomy 30, verse 4. Again, we could point that out. You can see it in Zechariah 2, verse 10. Mark 13, 28. Here's a little bit of references. We always start with these verses. Chapter 13, verse 28. That was the end of Jesus' teaching. Now he captures a parable, and now he's going to tell you two things. That was the end of his teaching about his second coming. Now he's got two things. There's going to be one, a parable. Is that how you spell parable? And the second is going to be, a warning. This parable is about 70 A.D. This warning is about end times, or living for the end times, and this wraps up the chapter. He's done in a sense with his signs, his teaching, what's going to happen in the future as far as necessarily a prophet. Now he's going to teach. From the fig tree, learn its lesson. As soon as its branches become tender and puts out its leaves, you know that summer is near. Again, people rush down, well, the fig tree must be Israel. Okay, go with that. But, and again, I've got that all written down right here. Yet, point B, I've said, God is going to gather Israel at the end of the end times, not to rebuild a temple for the Antichrist. So reading Israel for a fig tree may send the reader in the wrong direction. At the end, God is not going to bring Israel back before the end times. He's going to bring Israel back at the end of the 70th week. They are together with who at the beginning of the 70th week? They're at the beginning of the 70th week, they build a temple, or they use a temple, because the Antichrist gave it to them. Or they're with they've signed a peace treaty with the Antichrist. That's not God restoring Israel. So I would question, again, history is moving in this direction, but I would question, God's in control. But what you see happening in Israel right now, I do not think is God gathering Israel. Now he's going to use it. The gathering of Israel is going to take place in the end when he makes, we can talk about that in a greater, there's going to be a great return of Israel in the future. So be careful, because what's taking place right now in Israel, I'm pro-Israel. I love Israel, but understand the next historical thing prophetically that Israel does is sign a peace treaty with the Antichrist for 7 years. They don't just join with the Western church and become Protestants. They don't support the Christians. The Jews are interested, and I'm not blaming them, I'm not against them, I'm for them. But the next prophetic thing they do is not return to Jesus Christ and see the one that was pierced. They return to what they think is their God, their Messiah, who's manifesting himself in this man, this political leader, which we would identify as the Antichrist, and they sign a treaty with him that at the halfway point, I think the Antichrist doesn't change his mind. He's got full intention after 3.5 years of breaking this covenant. He's just getting the Jews out of his way so he can do something worldwide as far as setting up his kingdom, mainly persecuting the church for 3.5 years. Thus, you've got the great amount of martyrs under the altar in heaven, because the Antichrist has been persecuting Christians. And at the halfway point, once he's got the world under control, he tells the Jews, I was just keeping you distracted, pulls him out of the temple, sets his own image up, offers his own sacrifice, and the Jews realize, we've been lied to. Right, just like the prophet Daniel told you, just like Jesus, that just like the church been saying, it's like, and not that the church is always, the institutional church is not always right itself, but the scriptures say, but nonetheless, it's hard to imagine that the fig tree is Israel being brought back together, because when they do come back together, they're coming back together with the Antichrist. And that could be the sign. When they come back with the Antichrist, you're in the end. More literally, point D, more likely this is a simple parable that is saying, keep watch. Remember that. These events will let you know what season you are in, just like buds on a tree let you know that it's almost spring. Also, some of the events mentioned are not the events of end times, but the events of history. We've already talked about that. Okay, from the fig tree, learn its lesson. As soon as its branch becomes tender and puts out its leaves, you know that summer is near. So be watching these events. So also, when you see, watch this, when you see, verse 29, when you see these things taking place, you know that he is near at the very gates. When you see these things, and the fact that it says these things, and they ask, what are these things? These things are, it's happening. It's right here. Your judgment on the temple is near. And so the buds have nothing to do with Israel, have nothing to do with, this is me teaching, I may be wrong. But in this context, this is talking about 70 AD. When you see these things, just like when you see the buds, you know summer's coming. When you see these things start happening, you know the temple's coming down. And that's what you asked me about. When will these things happen? When you see these things, it's your generation is not going to pass away until you see these things. And now he's wrapping up his teaching. So verse 29, so also when you see these things taking place, you know that he is near at the very gates. Truly, I say to you, this generation will not pass away until these things take place. I've got two verses written right there at the bottom, 2 Peter 3:12, where they're talking about waiting for the coming of the kingdom. The Christians, the first century Christians, they would have known this was coming, but they're also looking for this. Now understand, this gets confusing and gives room for some criticism. They don't know when this is going to happen. They would know this generation is not going to pass away so they can watch these things develop. But this right here, they don't know it's that someday we're going to be reading these letters 2,023 years later. That's not exactly right because you got to do some math there. You got 30 AD. We'll just say about 2,000 years later, we're reading these letters trying to interpret when do they mean. They were looking for the return of Christ when? At the same time. I mean, they're looking at the Jerusalem going into war with the Romans. At the same time, they're looking, this would be a great time for Jesus to come back. I mean, Jerusalem's being burnt. Jesus is going to come back. Now Jerusalem's in smoldering. Church has fled. Now they come back. They rebuild. It's like now it's 2,000 years later. We still are waiting for this. So it's not surprising you see verses like this in the New Testament. 2 Peter 3:12. He writes, and I'm just jumping into it, waiting for and hastening, which hastening means to urge on, to desire earnestly, the coming of the day of God, because of which the heavens will be set on fire and dissolved, and the heavenly bodies will melt as they burn. So Peter's saying, we're waiting for the coming of the kingdom of God. Amazingly, 1 Thessalonians 4:17, and everybody knows this, but you don't always make a point of it, we talk about the church meeting the Lord in the air at the rapture. Now, you got a pre-trib, you got a mid-trib, you got a post-trib. You know, there's going to be a rapture. It's like, when's it going to take place? That's another conversation. I've got opinions, and my opinions have changed. Nonetheless, Paul is talking about that rapture here. But guess who he thinks is going to meet the Lord in the air? Him. He doesn't say, someday that generation will meet the Lord in the air. He says, then we who are still alive, or we who are alive, who are left, and that is who left remain after a disaster. That's what that means, to be left. Or that's like a train wreck. We who were left after the train wreck. That's a modern illustration. Left. I mean, in other words, that kind of gives me idea that the church is going to see some persecution in the tribulation. And we who are left, we who were not killed in the first 3.5 years of the tribulation, we who are left, okay, that might go off subject. Nonetheless, Paul says, but we who are left, we who are alive, who are left, will be caught up together, there's your word rapture, with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air, so we will always be with the Lord. But nonetheless, Paul's thinking, because he's alive, he's considering himself the rapture generation. Then he lives, he dies, and he's not. And so the next generation, they're the rapture generation. And now here we are, we think we're the rapture generation, which is the right response to Jesus' answer, which was, you don't know. And that's where this goes now. Chapter 13, 31, heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. So right there's three things in those two verses that I real very quickly pass away or referred to. This generation will not pass away. Heaven and earth will pass away. My words will not pass away. In other words, what that is saying is, point three, Jerusalem will fall by 70 AD. Heaven and earth will be shaken and be disregarded and considered void and vain sometime. But in the end, Jesus' words will not pass away. So yes, Jerusalem's going to pass away. In fact, this entire universe is going to pass away, but my words will not pass away. So there's your focus. This is going to happen. This is going to happen and pass away. And in the end, what matters is Jesus' words. And so that's where I go on with this. The shaking of creation is referred to in Mark 13, 24 through 25, referring to Old Testament verses. We just read that. This chapter has been about Jerusalem being shaken, heaven and earth being shaken, but Jesus continues as the unmovable shaker. He's the one doing the shaking. Chapter 13, verse 32, I'm wrapping this up very fast. We can finish this chapter. But concerning that day or hour, no one knows, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. What about these? Now notice what it says. What about that day or that hour? No one knows. This right here, it's pretty simple. No one knows this. The Son of Man doesn't know this. It's not just we're not going to give you the date. It's you can't comprehend it. You can't you don't have the facility to figure this out. It would be useless to you. You don't fit here. It's like it's a mystery. But concerning that day, see right there, that day or that hour, these things. Now that day, so you can just see the switch. These things, 70 AD, these things that we're watching, but that day. What you need to do, and I got some things written down there. Here's what you need to do. Be on guard. Keep awake. For you do not know when the time will come. So here's his answer right here. I can't tell you this. I don't even know. If you read that literally, nor the angels, are not even the angels, nor the Son of Man. He says, that information, there's nothing, it's not like I'm going to keep it from you. I don't know this. I know it's hard to wrap your mind around that. But he says, what I can tell you, is this, be on your guard, G-U-A-R-D, and keep awake. This is what I can tell you. I can tell you about this. These things will happen in this generation. But as far as here, the best thing I can tell you is you've got to be on your guard and you've got to be awake because you've got a job to do. Not only evangelizing the world, but you've got a job to do is growing and maturing in Christ. So here's what I wrote right here. This is very quickly, bottom of page 5. This is the answer to the disciples' question. The question, tell us, when will these things be, number one, and then what will be the sign when all these things, see, these things, the answer to question number one would be the answer. Here's the right here, I'm reading Jesus' words. The answer to question one, when will these things be? When you see these things taking place, you know that he is near at the very gates. This generation will not pass away until all these things take place. Short answer, 70 AD. Answer to question number two. Concerning that day or that hour, no one knows, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. Short version, I cannot answer that because even I do not know. And then the next thing, but the two things Jesus does know is be on your guard, keep awake, be on your guard. We've seen that word already tonight. Blepete means to look. It used to say look, see, perceive, discern. Be on your guard, be guarding, be perceiving what's actually happening. Don't be confused by the world. And keep awake. There's the Greek word, meaning to be sleepless, to be wakeful, used to say, I am awake, or I am not sleeping, or I am watchful, or I am careful. Notice the Greek box right there. Jesus, in the English translation, says, there it is. Chapter 13, verse 33, be on guard, keep awake, for you do not know when the time will come. In the Greek, you've got two words there, blepete, agrypraetite. Okay, that's poor. Two words, guard and awake. That's the answer. We do not know, but be on your guard, be awake. And then he tells chapter 13, verse 34, wrapping this up, it is like a man going on a journey. Jesus would be the man. When he leaves home and puts his servants in charge, you are the servants, or James, John, Andrew, and Peter, you're in charge. I'm going away. I'll probably find out when I'm coming back when I go away. But I'm going to leave you in charge. You've got to be on your guard and you've got to be awake. Like a man going on a journey, when he leaves home and puts his servants in charge, each with his work, and that's again, each with his work. There's freedom in the church where everybody doesn't have to be a Bible teacher having Bible study in their home. Not everybody has to be doing whatever, you know, whatever you're calling, whatever you feel God is calling you, leading, what you've been empowered to do. That's you. Each one with his work. We've each got a thing assigned to us. It doesn't have to be like a big banner. You don't have to have your own logo. each with his own work, and commands the doorkeeper to stay awake. Therefore, stay awake, for you do not know when the master of the house will come, in the evening, in the midnight, or when the rooster crows, or in the morning. Those are your four basic watches of the Roman clock. It's like, Jesus didn't tell you the time. It's like, I can't tell you the year, can't tell you the day. I can't tell you the four different watches of the night or the day. The key to this chapter, let me read this again. Therefore, stay awake, for you do not know when the master of the house will come, in the evening or at midnight, or when the rooster crows or in the morning, lest he come suddenly and find you asleep. And what I say to you, I say to all, stay awake. So this answer right here, he says it twice there at the end. Stay awake. This is the message of eschatology. If anything, eschatology is a motivation. There is a kingdom coming. There's disaster coming. There's going to be a time of confusion. Don't be alarmed. What do we need to do? You need to stay awake so you don't get destroyed in the process. That's the message. I mean, that's the message of this chapter. Because it's like, well, why don't you just tell us? Even if he told you the date, the answer is still the same. You need to be awake and alert, doing what you're supposed to be. And that, my friends, ends chapter 13. And when we turn to chapter 14, we begin a totally different, it says chapter 14, now the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread were only 2 days away, and the chief priests and the teachers of the law were looking for some sly way to arrest Jesus and kill him, but not during the feast, they said, or the people may riot. So they're going to get rid of Jesus, but they knew they've got to ride this Holy Week out, get rid of the path, finish the Passover, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and everybody go home, have a nice time, we'll see you next year, and then we can start focusing on Jesus. Little do they know, they're going to kill him in the middle of the feast, because that's when he's appointed to die. And it kind of gives that setting right there that they're so far out of control. They've got a plan, but they've got to do their plan in God's timing, the way he wants it done. So that way we head into Jesus' suffering here in chapter 14. I'll pray and we're done. If you have any questions or corrections or insights, feel free. Father, we do thank you for the chance to look into these things. We thank you for your word. We ask that we may keep our hearts alert, that we may keep our minds focused on you, that you would continue to lead and guide us with your word, with your spirit. And we ask again that we may be a light at this time in history. We do pray for our nation and pray for our churches, that we may again see revival as people come to the truth in these crucial times as we ourselves cycle through history. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you for your time.